So when the organizers of the conference actually asked me to give a summary talk, which I refused to do because it would be too hard to give a summary talk. You'd actually have to listen to every lecture. However, I realized that that was false, and actually I do have time, especially since we're in strange Lorentzian signatures, to give two talks, and I'll first give the summary talk and then discuss a few aspects of large N gauge theories, gauge dynamics as seen by string theory. So this is the summary talk. And now we will proceed to my modest contribution. I would like to discuss a few aspects of large N gauge theories that I've been thinking about recently after all the ADS excitement, as seen by string theory. And I'll be discussing largely work done in collaboration with Hiroshi Iguri, which has appeared, and with Hiroshi and Nadav Drucker, which is in preparation. And aside from discussing this and the work of many others, as well as some speculations in the end, so I'll try to discuss a few properties of especially Wilson loop dynamics as seen by this marvelous correspondence that I find particularly interesting and promising and perhaps also problematic. I'll also discuss a bit of the nature of the short distance structure of gauge theories as is shown in the strong coupling limit by this ADS correspondence, and discuss the loop equations that are supposed to be one way of formulating the complete gauge theory dynamics, and whether one can establish them, check them, or use them in the strong coupling regime. And finally, I'll make some remarks about the dangers and possibilities of large N phase transitions in this correspondence, and some remarks about the stringy exclusion principle. So there's certainly no need to reiterate the summary of the conference and discuss the famous ADS conformal field theory correspondence duality. Here, it's been reiterated many times, I am going to concentrate on those observables in Yang-Mills theory, which correspond to extended Wilson loops sitting, as we learn from the work of Maldacena, Gubser, Klebanov, Polyakov, and Witten, at the boundary of ADS space, and which are calculated by evaluating the partition function of the type 2D string theory with boundary conditions, in this case boundary conditions that the string world sheets end on the given contour. So here, of course, I've illustrated the geometry in the case of anti-de Sitter space, which should correspond to the supersymmetric, conformally invariant super-Yang-Mills theory, although we'll also be discussing the more interesting cases where supersymmetry and conformal invariance are broken, perhaps relevant to attacking QCD. Now, as a someone who has been thinking about large N dynamics of gauge theories and trying to find a string theory representation of QCD for a long time, I must say that when this development occurred, there were a few things that surprised me enormously. And among those was the fact that here one was proposing that the large N limit in the simplest formulation, in the ADS-5 formulation of the correspondence, that the large N limit of a non-confining, indeed conformally invariant, Yang-Mills theory in the Coulomb phase was equivalent to a string theory, that there master field of that large N gauge theory was a string. This is certainly was expected, has been expected for over 30 years for confining theory such as QCD, where we think of the string as the electric flux tube connecting quarks and antiquarks, but not in the case of a theory in the Coulomb phase. It's even more surprising. The first surprise is compounded when we add it to the second surprise, namely the conjecture tells us, among the rest, that supersymmetric N equals 4 Yang-Mills theory has a very simple strong coupling expansion. It's somewhat of a surprise that there is such a simple strong coupling expansion in a continuum Yang-Mills theory, and that this expansion is just the alpha prime expansion of a string theory. Now, this is true for lattice gauge theories. On the lattice, if we do strong coupling expansions, we indeed get a very simple strong coupling expansion. And indeed, that strong coupling expansion is the same as the alpha prime expansion of a lattice string theory. But it is, I must say, extremely surprising to me that there could be such a simple strong coupling expansion in a continuum theory, and that it could be the alpha prime expansion of a string theory that describes the Coulomb phase. Now, you all know how that happens. The problem, of course, that you would face is, if you have an ordinary four-dimensional theories, if both of these facts are true, then the force law between quark-antiquark would be constant, the linear potential, since the Wilson loop would be dominated in a string theory in the alpha prime expansion by the minimal area surface. And what happens in the ADS-4 correspondence, however, is that when you insert the quarks at the boundary of ADS space, or close to it, at U equals U naught, U being the radial direction, let it go to infinity, the string world sheet prefers not to live on the boundary where the area element is infinite. Rather, it takes an excursion into the middle of ADS space to where the area element vanishes in such a way, indeed, that you do not get an area law in the boundary metric. So that, in fact, as Maldacena first showed, when you calculate the expectation value using this prescription of a pair of quarks moving along in the time direction separated by distance L, you find, after an infinite subtraction, just a Coulomb law as required by conformal invariance with a determined coupling constant dependence for large G squared N, the region where you can trust the semi-classical string theory. The dominant term, however, is a linear term proportional to the T and to the separation of the quarks times U naught, which is thought of as the infinite mass associated with the Wilson line, not the bare mass of the quarks that are inserted here, but rather, as we'll see, the ultraviolet, the divergent mass U naught, in fact, should be thought of as Lenny emphasized, and as is evident in all the calculations, really, that have been done in this conjecture, as an ultraviolet regulator of the gauge theory. Now, well, as you know, there have been a lot of results, a lot of expansions, and further results on this, the behavior of Wilson loops and the dynamics of gauge theories using this conjecture. Many of them have been discussed at this conference, particularly in Itzhaki's talk, and I'll just go through rapidly. In particularly, Witten showed us how we can take the conformally invariant theory and get to a more interesting case, which is not conformally invariant nor supersymmetric, by compactifying some of the dimensions. For example, One can introduce finite temperature in the case of the four-dimensional gauge theory. That breaks supersymmetry. The fermions are antiperiodic on the boundary. And in fact, he showed that in that case, the geometry that dominates the path integral in the sum in the correspondence, because of the antiperiodic boundary conditions, should be not the anti-de Sitter space background, but rather the Schwarzschild black hole with a horizon at U equals U naught determined by the temperature or the radius of the compactified circle. And in that case, you are discussing, for large temperature, essentially the behavior of a dimensionally reduced three-dimensional quantum chromodynamics in which the fermionic and scalar partners of the gluon are very heavy. So this very much would have the dynamics of three-dimensional QCD with area law confinement for spatial Wilson loops as we expect. And the way that happens is very beautiful. Of course, the quark and anti-quark again prefer, the string connecting the quark and anti-quark again prefer to wander into the boundary of ADS space, but now the space terminates at U equals U naught, and the metric in that vicinity now does not vanish, and the cost is still proportional to the length between the strings, or we still have an area law with a string tension given by as we might expect, the only scale that enters into this problem, which is the temperature, or the inverse radius of the circle. And so this is a confining theory, a way of constructing, if you want, QCD3, with a ultraviolet cutoff at the temperature T, and indeed it yields an area law and a string tension proportional T squared times the square root, again, of the four-dimensional gauge coupling. If one wanted to describe real QCD3, which would be a fantastic achievement, one would have to go way beyond this large coupling approximation, because, of course, in the limit of, in order to recover the continuum three-dimensional gauge theory, one must take this ultraviolet cutoff. Here, the circle of this, a circle of radius 1 over t to infinity, and take the coupling to 0 appropriately, and hope that the string tension remains finite instead of diverging to infinity, as it would appear to in the strong coupling approximation. To do that, one, of course, has to go way beyond the strong coupling approximation. Now, many other properties of non-conformally invariant gauge theories have been discussed, and by a whole variety of authors, including the finite temperature phase transition in four-dimensional QCD, the appearance of an electric or screening mass, a mass gap in the Grewball spectrum in three-dimensional QCD and in four-dimensional QCD. All of these calculations are basically done by considering the correlation function of Wilson loops, again inserted on the boundary of anti-de Sitter space. The world sheet wanders into the middle. You pull them apart and you look for the dependence on the distance. Exponential behavior is an indication of a mass gap, or it determines the masses of the lowest particles in the given channel. What happens is quite simple to visualize in the confining or cases. As you pull apart the Wilson loops, you stretch the string between the loops out here in ADS space. At some point, you can go no farther. There is no minimal area surface. An instability develops, and you can see this if you play around with soap bubbles, and the surface collapses to an infinitesimally thin tube connecting your two probes, gauge invariant probes, And of course, that infinite zero size tube is just what we mean in the supergravity theory as a graviton, a dilaton, or another massless supergravity, member of the supergravity multiplet. So indeed, as Witten first pointed out, the mass gap or the Gluebolt spectrum or any of these things are governed by the masses as calculated by solving Laplace's equation, Laplacian on ADS, and have been calculated to great accuracy, at least numerically. Now, in the four-dimensional QCD, the answer that one gets is obviously going to be proportional to the only scale in the problem, which again is the radius of a five-dimensional or a ratio of radii of a six-dimensional theory that needs to be compactified to break the supersymmetry, times for large coupling, g squared n, times some number. This is very similar, as I tried to emphasize before, to what one finds in lattice gauge theories when one does strong coupling expansions. There, what happens when you separate the Wilson loops is that in between you get a cylinder of plaquettes that shrink to the smallest possible size, which is 1 over the lattice spacing, and that tube of size 1 over A gives you a Gluebolt mass or a correlation mass that is proportional to 1 over A. That's the only scale, mass scale in the system in lattice gauge theory, times in this case log of g squared n. Now, what is very beautiful in this realization in the ADS case is that the Gluebolt has shrunk, this little cylinder of Wilson plaquettes, this whole tube, is shrunk to zero size, which in a normal case would give you a massless exchange, massless glue balls, because you'd get a tensionless string. However, in this case, the graviton and the dilaton aren't indeed massless, in effect, in ADS space, and you get a finite glue ball mass. So you're able to get, by the same kind of picture, in fact, something which, in my opinion, is exactly analogous, a continuum tensionless string with a mass. And your regularization does not break Lorentz invariance and other spatial symmetries. However, once again, this is the Gluebolt mass is calculated in a theory with an ultraviolet cutoff. And in order to remove the cutoff, you have to take T to infinity. And we know the way to do that. You're supposed to, according to asymptotic freedom, take the coupling to zero. And that means you can no longer trust this result. You have to work to all orders in powers of inverse 1 over g squared n for large g squared n, or know the exact answer, solve 2B string theory in this background, which in the case of QCD is going to be pretty difficult, and then hope that this function you get of g squared n will behave correctly exponentially as you let the coupling go to zero and take the cutoff to infinity. It's exactly what you have to do in the lattice gauge theory. There, too, you get a Gluebolt mass spectrum in the strong coupling limit, but you have to extrapolate that to weak coupling to recover the continuum limit. Now, I think it's a mistake to try to compare quantitative tests of QCD 4 or 3 as seen by this correspondence with other regularizations of gauge theories or with the real world, because certain things might work, but there are certain things that certainly don't work. For example, this is the plot of Regis trajectories that you get if you use this correspondence. Remember, in the ADS conformal field theory correspondence, the slope of the string, the Regi slope of the string excitations, alpha prime, is effectively going to zero, like 1 over g squared n. So the lowest Gluebolt masses are here, and they have higher angular momentum particles living on trajectories with a very small slope. So I can't even show them. And the splitting in this direction between the lowest masses and the excitations is of order of the string scale. However, there are also, if you want, there are excitations of the principal quantum number, the things when you solve the Laplacian and calculate global masses, you get lots of higher recurrences, and they are split by order 1, and so that means that there are lots of these other trajectories for each one here with a very dense splitting. That certainly doesn't look like the real world. Furthermore, the trajectory here will have an intercept around 2, which means that total cross-sections will increase in energy in this theory, which you could indeed calculate. You could calculate the scattering of hadrons in these confining theories constructed in this way, and you would find that their cross-sections increase because essentially the lowest blue ball trajectory, these trajectories contain the graviton, and in this approximation, the scattering will look just like gravitational exchange with a slightly massive graviton. So I will skip then 5 more minutes. I will skip then some other work that Hiroshi and I did, which I found very encouraging for this picture, namely that not just the qualitative aspects of confinement emerge, but also that the same thing happens, the correct pattern emerges when one considers higher representations, not just fundamental quarks. One gets the behavior for higher representations, this is gotten by looking at loops that go around many times, that is consistent with the general expectations, and again depends, in this case, heavily on the fact that the underlying master field string theory, the type 2B string theory, is fermionic. And so, as long suspected, to get the right behavior of higher representations of QCD or of higher twist Wilson loops, one needs a fermionic string theory. Even more remarkable is the fact that this theory contains the possibility of describing baryons in a natural way. There is a baryon vertex that Gregory and I and Witten described. I won't describe that either. I want to say a word about divergences. If you construct according to this prescription Wilson loops, you do so by, if you're careful, by putting the loop at a finite distance from the boundary and going through the answer. And then you find a divergence proportional to the length of the loop. This is the exact answer for a circle, Wilson loop in the ADS-5 case, where you can do it exactly. Now, an important thing to note here is that this distance from the boundary, you can see is to be interpreted as an ultraviolet cutoff, in the sense that if you let U0 become big, this diverges linearly, just like the mass renormalization in a gauge theory. You have a finite piece left over. This explains what's going on with the so-called zigzag symmetry of gauge theories. As Polyakov is important, has stressed over and over again, gauge theories obey a very simple symmetry called zigzag symmetry, which simply means you can go back and forth along a loop, and that doesn't cost anything because this is reparameterization invariant. Going back and forth doesn't change, cancels out. It's not at all clear how to achieve that in a string theory, which doesn't obviously have this kind of zigzag symmetry. However, I claim that this correspondence does have exactly the zigzag symmetry. The loops you get from this correspondence principle give you a theory with zigzag symmetry as long as you keep the regulator finite, which means you keep U0 finite. So, for example, a loop like that, before you take it to the boundary, as you shrink the area to 0, indeed goes to 1, as it must. There should be no holonomy about a point, because as long as you're not at the boundary, the area element is finite, and 0 times something finite is 0. If, however, you first take the loop to the boundary, and pick out the finite piece, you get a number which does not go away no matter how small the loop is. That's an example of zigzag symmetry, and the same is true for any zigzags. For the regulated Wilson loops, you have, of course, zigzag symmetry. For the renormalized ones, you don't. That's the case in quantum field theory, and that's the case here. And the Maldacena prescription gives you the regulated Wilson loops if you stay away from the boundary, and U naught should be regarded as a regulator. And the proof of that is, indeed, some recent work of Oguri, Drucker, and I, in which we look at corner divergences. You look at Wilson loops with corners, they don't have a mass renormalization, but there is an extra divergence in any gauge theory, which comes from a sharp turn, a non-continuity, non-differentiability of a curve, a cusp, or a crossing that enters into loop equations. You get a specific logarithmic divergence. And when you go through and calculate the area, minimal area, you find, in addition to a length divergence proportional to U naught, a corner divergence coming from the area near the corner, which goes logarithmically. And that clearly establishes that U naught is an ultraviolet cutoff, and you have exactly the same divergences that you get in ordinary gauge theory, which is a very good thing if you would like to use the loop equations, which are non-trivial only when loops cross and have these corners. And we're in the process of trying to show that the loop equations of supersymmetric gauge theories are indeed satisfied. These equations are non-perturbative and, again, only hold for regulated loops. And that might be a way of establishing, in the large coupling limit, the correspondence of gauge theory with ADS, and maybe of systematically doing a large coupling expansion. And finally, I will end on some remarks about phase transitions. The Maldacena conjecture in its simplest form, the form that it's been used, has been to identify super Yang-Mills theory, say N equals 4, with supergravity, namely weakly coupled gravity and strongly coupled gauge theory, this region here. The strong form that Maldacena would advocate is that the two theories are equivalent, but clearly there are problems either at N equals infinity going down to weak coupling and certainly going to finite string coupling. At N equals infinity, most large N gauge theories, most large N theories have phase transitions as a function of some parameter, including the coupling. For the famous example is the one Plaquette model that Witten and I discovered had a phase transition where, in effect, the eigenvalues of the holonomy, in this case around the only Plaquette in the world, go over from being concentrated near the origin to smooth around the circle. It gives rise to a third-order phase transition and a discontinuity or kink in certain observables. Same thing happens in two-dimensional QCD on a sphere. It's generated by instantons, which turn on sharply at some value of the coupling times the area. It's also believed to happen in the actual world in lattice gauge theory, even for finite n. And what this means is probably, if this happens in this correspondence, it would be unfortunate in the sense that the strong coupling or semi-classical expansion of the string theory could be continued down to recoupling, but might give you simply the wrong answer, not overlap at all with a weak coupling perturbation theory. That will make it very hard to get a confining theory of QCD. That doesn't mean that one might not get a string theory of QCD for small lambda, which is what one has to do to get to the continuum theory, but it will not be the one seen by continuing the large coupling expansion to small coupling, just as it isn't in lattice gauge theory. And it also might mean that observables like the famous, and like the counting factor that Klebanov, Gubser show, and Pete, and I'm not sure who else, showed goes from 1 for weak coupling to 3/4 for strong coupling, might not match the weak coupling continuation might miss. There might be a discontinuity or a cusp. However, I don't think that might just require a better choice, as in lattice gauge theory, of the appropriate dual string theory in order to have a smooth extrapolation. More serious is the attempt to extrapolate this correspondence down this way and to argue that string theory for finite n is equivalent to gauge theory. There you run into the exclusion principle, which again is seen in other simple models like two-dimensional QCD, where you have both a string theory of a gauge theory, that in effect the number of degrees of freedom of the theory is bounded by some function of n or 1 over the string constant, coupling constant, and when you go beyond an asymptotic expansion, there is in a sense no meaning to a string. This can be most clearly seen by taking the limit n goes to 1 where there are no degrees of freedom, and I'm not sure what it would mean to have a string theory with no degrees of freedom. So if indeed this what this correspondent seems to suggest to me is that string theory is not fundamental, that it has no meaning beyond an asymptotic expansion in 1 over n, and beyond that there is no such thing as string theory which one could say is overlaps or is dual to gauge theory. That is the case in two-dimensional QCD. But if we then try to say that a boundary theory is the fundamental description of the theory, we are even farther from a background-dependent description of string theory than we were before, because whereas one might imagine some kind of string theory and some kind of string field theory in 11 dimensions that had all sorts of different compactifications, here, even determining what the degrees of freedom are depend on the background, which depends on the space. So I think we're as far as we were, or perhaps even farther, from understanding what the fundamental and background degrees of freedom are and the background-independent formulation of the theory. So let me just end by thanking you all, as the director of the ITP, for coming to the ITP and to Strings 98, and see you all at Strings 99 in Potsdam, and some of you at the ITP program next fall, a year from now, on the dynamics of supersymmetric gauge theories, which, as you know, now means everything.
。Thank you, David. Let's ask a few questions. Yes, Misha? The question is, do you expect phase transition even for supersymmetric gauge theory?
I don't know. That is perhaps the case that's most protected. There are good arguments that perturbation theory might converge, for example. And however, there are instantons in that theory. I don't know, 50-50.
Any other question? Okay, then let's thank David again.